I'm pleased to welcome my guest today to the Old Gray Mayors podcast. He is a long, long time politician from Cambridge. He was elected a councillor for the Preston area in 1991 and became a fixture on Cambridge Council until 2014. Then he ran and was elected to regional council and stayed there for two terms until 2022. During that time, he was a member of and vice chair on the Police Services Board. I'm pleased to welcome to the Old Gray Mayors podcast, Preston's favorite son, Carl Kiefer. Carl, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Robin. Thank you.
Listen, so during our conversations, I learned that I have you to blame for our loss against the Grand River Renegades when I was playing defense for the St. Jerome's Lions. You were the Stripes.
Yeah, well, I spent a few years in the OHA refereeing, and I was surprised when you told me your coach was Mr. Rooney, who I had a few interesting conversations with.
Yeah, we won't get into that, but I understand. Hey, it's hockey, and we're Canadian, we're passionate about it. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so Carl, let's get started here. And how is it that the Kiefer family came to be in Preston?
Well, as you know, but maybe some others don't, we immigrated from Germany in 1955. My parents, they decided that they would come to Canada to start a new life. And my mom and my dad were like my uncle was already in Canada. He came in 52 when I was born, and then that was my dad's only brother, and he wanted to follow him and come here. And of course, my aunt and uncle were special too, because my uncle was my dad's brother and my mom was my aunt's sister. So two brothers married two sisters. So but anyways, and they lived in Preston, Rob, and so that's why we came here.
Yeah, it's not unlike my situation. My dad, well, he was already 16 when they came here, but they came around 52.
Right.
And my mom from Germany, and my mom came from Italy around the same time. And so dad's family was in New Hamburg. And then, he was around and about, and mom's family, she was the fifth of five sisters, and the oldest was already in Woodstock. So they were in Woodstock initially and then made their way to Kitchener. Mm-hmm. So my parents actually met here, in Waterloo region at the time. So, okay. So now you're growing up in, Preston, and what was your dad doing for work when he was here?
Well, my dad was a machinist by trade. My uncle was a tool and die maker. And once they got established, took a little bit, Rob, because none of us could speak English. We all had to learn English. I did by the time I got to kindergarten. But my mom and my dad took English classes at the old Preston High School, which is Grandview Public School now. And they took that, and as soon as things started clicking there, and he had to, unfortunately, because we couldn't speak the language in the beginning, he took some odd jobs picking tobacco and things like that. But once he got into a situation where they knew he was a machinist, he was never without work.
Oh, for sure. It's funny you say picking tobacco. That was one of the first jobs my dad did too. Was, my grandmother sends him out to work for a farmer at $50 a week, and suddenly he disappears. Yep. And they didn't know where he was, and he showed up a month later with a wad of cash, and he found out you can make a lot more money picking tobacco. So I guess you became a machinist.
No, my dad wanted me to, Rob, but you know what? For some reason, I didn't want to work in a factory, but I think a lot of times I think back and I think I should have maybe done that, But anyways.
No, I know. My dad actually learned to be an electrician on the side. He ended up working at the B.F. Goodrich in downtown Kitchener. Yeah. But I think he always wanted me to join him as an electrician, but we all went different routes. Yeah. So but what did you end up doing in Preston then?
Well, of course, I went to Preston Public now, but it was Central Public School, and then I went to Coronation Public School to finish from grade. Well, actually, it was grade one to grade to get to grade eight, and then from there I went to Preston High School, and I was one of those guys that thought someday I would be playing in the NHL, and I played junior B in Preston, and then my last year junior, I went to the the St. Thomas Elgins. They were the there was a junior Southern Ontario Junior A League Tier Two at the time, and I went there for my last year, but I didn't finish out the year because there were some complications that came up, and I came back to Preston after that.
Okay, defense or forward?
I was defense, and I made a couple of mistakes, Rob. I actually had a scholarship from Colgate University in the States, and I didn't write the what they call the entrance exams or whatever.
Right, whatever they are. Yeah.
And I didn't go. Big mistake. The other thing I could have done, and I just sort of had it with hockey by that time, was go to Germany because I wouldn't have been counted as an import.
And go play some hockey there, for a while.
Yeah. But I didn't do that either.
Well, eventually you ended up in financial services.
Yeah, I got hired by Mutual Life in 1983. We were called agents in those days, not advisors as they are now. But and I stayed with them. Well, they changed the name to Clariga, and then Clariga got bought by Sun Life, and I was there 33 years in that role. But
okay, well, how did you come to your interest in politics then?
Well, when I was working with Mutual Life as an agent, I was working out of the agency in Cambridge with Ted Fairless. And Ted Fairless was a former councillor on city council in Cambridge and also with the region. And Ted was on council in Cambridge, and I started talking to him about it and getting interested. And this was back in 1988, Rob, that I first thought I might take a run at it. And after Ted got done telling, explaining it to me, I said, "Who in their right mind would want to do this?" And I said, "Okay, I'm not doing it anymore." But the bug was still within me and kept until 91, and I said, I'll either put up or shut up. So I put my name in and I ran, and I was successful.
Yeah, let me just touch base. So you mentioned Ted was on Cambridge Council and Regional Council. So that would have been when we had the double elect process where councillors from the local councils got elected onto the regional council.
That's correct.
Yeah, not versus the direct elect process, which is what you eventually did after you were done council.
Yeah. And gotcha. I'm not so sure, that wasn't the bad idea to stick with it, but there were many others that thought it wasn't the way to do it.
Yeah, we won't get into a debate on that right now. We'll talk about it maybe when we're talking about when you're on region that time. So, yeah, because Ted's doing double duty, and I don't know, was he a financial plan or an agent back then too?
Yes, he was many years, yep.
Okay, so it would have been, but tell me about your community involvement at this time. So, you got a bug about local politics, but were you involved in some community activities?
I was involved in, I did a little bit of coaching, minor hockey and baseball, things like that, and soccer. At one point I was a Rotarian for 3 years. And then because I got elected, I said, I can't dedicate the time to it anymore. So I pulled out of the Rotary, which is interesting because I ended up with a Paul Harris Award.
You mean you couldn't be a member of the, you were Rotary executive versus just a member of the Rotary, or?
No, I was a member. I was a member of the, I just felt, Rob, to be a part of it, you had to be more than just show up for lunch every Thursday. And so with all the other things going on in my life, politically, family, et cetera, I thought, I better back off from it.
Yeah, because some people don't realize, but, the Rotary, Knights of Columbus, all those groups are so active in their fundraising and everything else that they do that it's a real benefit to the community to have these guys around or these organizations around. But so you were involved in fundraising activities, that sort of thing with the Rotary?
Well, yeah, absolutely. We had, as you're probably familiar with, or maybe not because you're not from Cambridge, but you're close. You're from North Dumfries.
I have property in Cambridge.
I know you do. And we had a program called Rotary Roses, where we, sold roses as a fundraiser and things like that. And I had to chair that as my inaugural
Give it to the new guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Give it to the new guy. He doesn't know better.
Exactly. Well,
that's probably where you got the Paul Harris Award from. It's a recognition of a level of activity.
It was for my community activity, and it wasn't the same Rotary Club that I was part of, though.
Okay, gotcha. So, but you must have been watching Council too, and was there something there that you were concerned about or caught your eye?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that in those days, Preston would have the recognition that it should get, and of course my old friend Greg DeRocher was running in the other half of Preston, and I was running in the one half of Preston. Wow. So we teamed up there, and we were a pretty good team back in those days.
So Preston had, I guess, two wards at that time.
Yeah, it was split, Rob. It was split, and they changed. I mean, in my tenure, at one point in time, I had part of Galt and part of Preston, and they changed the wards around. But in those days, in 91 in particular, it was split Preston and two areas.
I guess we should step back a bit in time, and you weren't involved in this politically, but back in 73,
yeah,
is when we had the amalgamation of Galt, Hespler, Preston, and Blair.
That's correct. That's
into
correct.
Cambridge, right?
I was just a young, I don't know, about 18, 19 years old back then, or around that age anyways. the sentiment, I wasn't involved politically at all, but the sentiment of the people was that, you know, what's going on? How come we don't have a say? And the provincial government at the time was a conservative government that forced the amalgamation. So people were concerned, you know,
And you voted on that ballot for the name. Cambridge and Blair were two of the names that were on the ballot.
Yeah, they were, and I was so ticked off. I voted for Blair because I thought, you know, it's shorter to write and it's easier to write if you have to write out the name.
So then, over the two decades or almost from the time that happened to when you ended up running.
Yeah.
What was the general sentiment with respect to Preston and the Greater Cambridge concept? Well,
people were scratching their head and wondering how this was going to work, if it would work. And I mean, the government at the time, the provincial government at the time, said, "Oh, don't worry about it. Within 10 years, people won't be worrying about it." Well, I got news for you. Right now, to this day, you've got people talking about Galt, Preston, and Hespler, and what's going on, and. I think it's been pretty good for the city of Cambridge in terms of growth, even though you have the three, cores.
Right.
And of course, people like myself are getting old.
I guess you could say amalgamating was good in terms of centralizing and having one purpose. And the fact that you have three separate entities that still see themselves as different or unique, it's like City of Kitchener with all its neighborhoods associations stuff, right? Okay. So not really that much different.
I think that the thing that was, I'll say interesting here, was the fact that we had, you know, the double whammy, if you want to call it that, Rob, in terms of A, being forced into one city, but the other thing was, oh, by the way, you're going to be part of the region of Waterloo now, too.
Okay.
And so that was a little bit of a kicker, too. And the discussion goes on.
Yeah, there's always that issue, question about, is Cambridge getting their fair share, so to speak, from the region? Right. And then I always break it down with the former mayor when that comes up. And I say, well, that's not too different than when you used to tell me about how Preston and Hespler would say they weren't getting their fair share when it came to Galt. And then he would tell me that whenever he did his State of the City address, he'd always make sure he got stats out that showed on a per capita that the spending was the same, maybe even higher in some places. So
I think that's the same mayor that used to encourage the Cambridge Council to vote in favor of budgets, and then when he would go up to the region, he would vote against the budget. I think that's the same there.
Only certain budgets. Now he supports certain budgets.
You're right.
But anyway, so yeah. Okay, so 91, you get elected, and was Greg DeRocher already there, or was he
elected? That was his first term to him.
Oh wow!
There was Greg, Rob Atchade, and myself were the three rookies.
Okay, so Preston had quite the powerhouse contingent there.
Well, we thought we could maybe contribute to the way things were going or going to be running. We were younger, not that age should be a discriminatory thing, but we got along well.
Well, I'm not going to get into term limits with you because you've been there so long, and we're not going to talk about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. But, along those lines, sometimes change is good to happen, right?
I would agree with you, Rob, 100%.
Yeah, because sometimes people maybe get a little, as they say, long in the tooth and maybe aren't as active or progressive, not necessarily progressive, but looking to change things or, sometimes the status quo has to be changed up a little bit.
Yeah, and that's exactly what was happening with me with after 23 years on Cambridge City Council. I thought, maybe it's time to give somebody else an opportunity, maybe somebody with a different concept or fresh ideas. And I was willing to take, if they voted me in, the regional spot, right, which I was happy to take.
Yeah, by changing it up and like there's some people that promote the idea of term limits, like two or three terms. But if you want to run for either like mayor or in this case regional council, right, and open up the council spots for some new people.
Right.
I have it down here. You won by 45 votes in that first election.
Yeah, it was very close. Lauren Wallace and myself battled it out. Mark Coleman was the third one, and it was a three-way race. And the actual ward used to belong to Graham Bush, who vacated that particular time to run at the region, and he wasn't successful. But that's another story.
Oh, because by then they had the direct elect going on in 91.
If
he was running for the region, probably.
I believe it wasn't necessarily then yet, but okay. I'm not sure.
If he was running for the region, that's probably what was going on, because then he wasn't running for council. So interesting. But anyway, the seat opened up, and so that's when you had your chance.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's tough to beat an incumbent. Who was the mayor then?
The mayor in Cambridge?
Yeah.
I believe it was Jane Brewer.
Okay, so your mayor was Jane Brewer. Okay. And so when you're a rookie on council then, Doug Craig was already on council at that time?
He was.
He was one of the veterans.
or he was an interesting understudy, let's put it that way.
So, you said some of the veterans helped you out a lot when you got there.
Yeah, people like Bill Strzok and Fred Kent and Ted Fairless, of course. But the thing I remember about Fred Kent, for instance, was we got talking about when you go out on the campaign trail and what were you saying? He said, Carl, what I do, and he was a longtime politician too, but he said, Carl, what I use and have used successfully is I don't get up on the soapbox and start to preach about, I'll promise you less taxes. I'll promise you this. I'll promise you that. He said, my line was, I promise to do the best that I can. And then he said, and that's the only thing I'll promise. And, I adopted that, Rob, and, and it's true. It works.
I found what was surprising to me the first time I ever ran, back in 2010.
Yep.
And so first time just going out to knock on doors for the first time and trying to anticipate what I think the questions are going to be.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. I was on a bit of a settlement area. So there's like 20 homes out in a country road there.
Right.
And I thought people would be talking about property taxes. all they kept talking about was the speeding cars and the pets they lost. That was the number one issue.
Exactly. And if you don't plow my road, I'm coming after you.
Property taxes rarely comes up as an issue on the campaign trail. It always seemed to be all these other things like speeding that were more prominent. So in those early days then, so you're on council, like you're saying, doing the best you can. Was there any particular issue that you were keen to do something about back in those early days?
Well, I remember the hydro building in Galt was on the docket and to be converted into a seniors complex, and I remember that this was going to go ahead real quick, and then Derosier, myself, and Atche said, "Well, wait a minute, how are you doing this, and why are you doing it?" And of course, being a rookie, I didn't realize that how far it had come, and how much money had been spent on it. And, of course, after I started doing the research, I thought, well, wait a minute, who are we, three rookies here to block this, right. It is a good thing. We need to carry on, even though,
Well, that raises an interesting point, that little story, because it gets to this idea that really didn't dawn on me until after a few years, is that you're basically there just carrying the baton and then passing on the baton to the next council. And that baton is, like, for example, this hydro billing that's been worked on in prior councils, and now it's on your lap. And you're not there to reinvent the wheel, but you've got to recognize that what's been going on before. Plus, as a council, you're not going to get everything done in your one term.
That's absolutely 100% right, Rob. That's exactly how I see it, too.
Yeah, like you're not going to get everything done. You're just sort of caretaker to the next thing. And a lot of times people don't realize, and you probably didn't realize, how long sometimes things take to happen or not happen.
Exactly. That was all brand new to me. And Rob, this too. I mean, you're not always going to win all the battles around the horseshoe, and you're not always going to get people to support you. The one thing you need to do is after whatever motion or whatever issue that you're dealing with, after it's done and discussed, you better support and risk, because you need to respect what council has decided.
Right.
And sometimes people go off on a tangent and do whatever they do.
Yeah. Once the vote's done, you can't keep fighting the fight, so to speak.
Exactly.
Right.
And then
move on. Yeah, I get you. So you ended up, what was it, to buy the building and convert it? Did it get converted to the senior center?
It did. And, the plans and everything, architecture plans and the design plans, everything had been already done.
So it was a big investment already when it got to your.
Exactly. Yeah. And what we didn't realize is, well, wait a minute, what are we doing here? We're black. And I think one of the senior counselors at the time came and spoke to us about it.
Took you aside.
Yep. Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that's always attached to you particularly is the whole idea of either it's a convention center or, expanded arena complex situation. Mm-hmm. Was that something that was on your radar early on or developed a little bit later?
It developed a little bit later. I think the early on, the conference thing was on not just my mind, but, Greg Grocer's and a few other counselors mind as well. But it evolved, and of course we tried looking at various companies that would be considered to going into it, and I remember one of the big issues at the time was that the Cambridge shopping center was going to be built. It was a John Gall Mall, right. and then you had all kinds of action on that, but we supported the new concept for a mall because Cambridge deserved that kind of a thing. And as you know, today there's two box store locations. Now, having said that, the box store locations are now starting to change their philosophy a little bit too, and I'm not sure where it's going.
Well, it seems to be going residential, but
yeah, that's true.
A lot of it, right?
And as you know, that housing is important. We need more.
Which is fine. But you have an interesting story, though, about remember the old Knob Hills farms at the intersection of Pine Bush and Hespler Road?
Pine Bush and Hespler Road, yeah. Steve Stavros was the owner, who also owned the Toronto Maple Leafs at the time. And Jim Castle from he was vice president of Aeroscraft, had set up a meeting for with Steve Stavros, myself, and Greg DeRocher in Toronto, and we went down with as a guest of Jim's, and of course we had no idea that Mr. Stavros was going to say, look, I'm at a point now where my wife wants me to get out of the grocery business, so I'm ready to sell that property. And, you know, and I believe the figure was, Rob, at the time, $32 million. He said, you can have the building and the property for $32 million. And we said, well, look, Mr. Stavros, we're not here, you know, with permission to make any deals. We're just here to, you know, as a guest, to feel you out on various things. We actually wanted him as a partner on the whole thing, but right. he wasn't interested in that. And the thing is that, you know, when Greg and I started talking about it, we thought, well, you know, $16 million the city could afford, $16 million the region could afford, and you'd have a corner there that you could build whatever the heck you wanted on it. City Hall, a conference center, you know, blah, 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 you know, go from there. But as it turned out, we took a little bit of heat when we got back into Cambridge and tried to throw that suggestion out there.
Yeah, right. So when you guys got back, the reception was chilly.
Very chilly, very chilly. And, you know, which to this day, I'm scratching my head on it because it could have been a great thing.
So would that have been, who's the mayor then? Was it Mayor Brewer?
Yes. Yes.
So is it one of those things that, like, lesson learned is get more people involved, and especially the top dog?
Well, I don't know, Rob, because, you know, like, as a council member, you know, you get, you know, you're approached by, you know, right. different companies, businesses,
yeah.
Non-charitable, profitable, you know, you name it. And in this case, we had a business person, you know, Jim Castle from Aeroscraft, who's no longer with us, but he was, you know, right on top of things. And he thought, well, you know, maybe this is an opportunity to get some people involved. And we went, Greg and I went purely out of the fact that, hey, this sounds like an interesting meeting. Let's see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you're right in getting more people involved. It's true. But, you know, the people that you get involved need to understand, you know, the background information too.
Yeah. I guess that gets to also too. I mean, the unique thing about municipal politics is that everyone's sort of, it's all equals, so to speak, at the table. It's not party politics, where, you know, there's the leader and everyone gets behind the leader or the party platform or what have you. So what was Steve Stavros like?
Well, he was an interesting person. I found him very interesting. Of course, me being a big Leaf fan, you know, that helped too, because he owned, you know, as I said, he owned the Leafs, and he himself, you know, and his family immigrated to Canada. And when he found out that I had immigrated to Canada, right away he wanted to know more about it, and, you know, my family and me. And then I remember him saying distinctly to Greg and me, he said, "I like," here's the quote from him, "I like the fire in your bellies." You know, and that, you know, because of what, you know, we were hoping that we could do, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to do something.
Yeah. So, but he was an interesting man.
So you mentioned City Hall. Is that location as a possible site for the City Hall? So you were on council when your new City Hall got approved and built, right? So
that's correct. That's correct.
So that would have been a project that you were involved with right from the beginning, unlike the gas building that you come on. So that one, though, over the years, the hydro building that you came in late on. So this one, though, you were there from the beginning to the end.
Yep.
Yeah, on that one. What was your view on that Galt location?
Well, I wasn't too pleased with it. I always thinking in the back of my head, my mind, the Galt Press and Esper thing, and what would be a good location to, you know, sort of please all the three former towns or cities. So I wasn't too pleased with it. Myself and two other councillors voted against the vote to have that location, and of course we lost. And then, like I said to you earlier, when I was talking with you about things, I said, you know, once council makes a decision, you know, you need to respect that, you know. Yeah. And so that's what happened. But I felt that corner of Knob Hill Farms would have been a terrific spot.
A good spot for access too, you know, off the 401. Yes, certainly. Exactly. But you know, I guess the old City Hall being where it was, it kind of made some sense to have the new one there. And that connection you have between the two, the walkway, and you still use the old one for council chambers and stuff, was a good reuse of the space. So you didn't have to create that space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the building, you know, and the building is, you know, one of the, what do you call it?
LEED certified.
It's LEED certified, and that's great.
I always joke that big wall garden there. I said it was always got trimmed to look like the mayor. A certain way. But anyway, so just then we could talking about Nob Hills and the location. I think I just want to touch base on that the multi-use sports complex idea that came up, right? Because you were there for part of that, but unfortunately now this is a situation where you were there at the beginning, but then you had to leave because you went to regional council. So now you've lost the baton. You left the baton behind, and some might say the baton got dropped.
But, so going back to the beginning, Doug Craig made me the Minister of Sport, I guess, if you want to call it that. And I ended up as the chair of that committee for the multi-use, and worked very closely with Jim King, former CEO, on it as well. And we were, you know, well on our way to getting something done there, because, Rob, what initiated the whole thing was there was three arenas in Cambridge: Dixon, Churchill, and Carl Holmoth. Those were the three rinks that needed to be replaced 10 years ago. Never mind now. They're still working now. And, you know, it's like pumping money into a bad situation all the time. I mean, you need the rinks. You got to keep them going. But, hey, we would have had now, if we would have went through with the deal that would have ended up on Conestoga College property, we would have ended up with, four new rinks, a gym, and a pool.
It would have been fantastic. Track the whole thing. Yeah. How did that deal come about?
Well, there was discussions ongoing between, you know, like I believe, again, I think it was Greg and myself that ended up talking to Tibbetts, you know, about
John Tibbetts, the president of Conestoga College.
He's kind of a headline news right now, but we won't go there. So there was interest on his part for the college to be involved. And we said, you know, makes sense. Let's have a look at this thing. And as you mentioned, though, I ended up, running for a regional counselor spot. Yeah. And I was the chair of that committee.
So let's talk about this for a second. Because back in the day when I was mayor, there was that controversy going on. We're talking about the South Campus, south of the 401, the Conestoga College campus. Right. And Conestoga was well established on the north side of the 401. And that land that Conestoga set up on the south side was land that was actually purchased by the city of Cambridge initially, correct?
Yeah, I think Don Smith was one of the, he was the CEO at the time, our CEO, and was involved in that. And that's how that went. But
I was just going to say, Cambridge bought the land. I just want to get into that story for a sec. Cambridge buys the land and then sells it at cost, basically, to Conestoga. So that
I wasn't on council when that deal went through in terms of when they bought the property.
Right, that was before your time.
That's correct.
Yeah. That's okay. But you know the story anyway. So the issue then became between Doug Craig and John Tibbetts, this issue about services and stuff out to that property, right?
Yep, that too. And Kitchener was a
but even though there was that controversy, because I had to sit between the two of them at Hydro Board meetings for a period of time during that going on, you could still work on another project that was going to be beneficial to the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. I just think that, I wished I could have been still back on that committee back in the day, but I wasn't.
I want to talk a little bit more about process here, because one of the things we like to do in the podcast is get an understanding of process so people can understand what municipal politics is all about.
Right.
So you're chair of this committee. Were you part of negotiating this arrangement with Conestoga College?
I was not.
Okay, so that would be what the mayor and the CAO were working on something?
Well, the CAO for sure, and of course the mayor would be involved in that. And, Doug always said we were going to get the multi-use, but, it didn't come through.
No, fair enough. We'll talk about that why. So, yeah. But you would have had to involve community groups, though, because you can come up with the concept, but whether you need, like, for, 25-meter pool versus a 50-meter pool, for example, you got to talk to the groups to know what to do.
Rob, we had public meetings, where we brought the public in, and, every meeting that I attended or was at, the public was in favor of doing this thing. Cambridge needs it. Our arenas are terrible. The dressing rooms are so small, blah, you go on. And all around us, including North Dumfries to this day now, have arenas and complexes that, why can't Cambridge do that,
Thanks for that. That was my baby, so I appreciate the comment. but let me ask you, the public meetings were on this particular project or just the idea that we need better recreational facilities before this particular project?
It would be this particular project. Okay. And I'm trying to remember, you might be right. Part of it might've been just, we need better recreational facilities, but for sure, specifically the multi-use complex was the key issue.
Yeah. That it should be multi-use.
Because Rob, we were at a situation where, people would say, Carl, even if it's going to cost us a few more dollars tax wise, we need this. Let's do it.
Well, it reminds me of the Gretzky in Brantford, right?
Exactly.
Four pads. Yeah. I think they have a swimming pool, don't they, or something there too?
Trying to remember. Yeah, it's quite a complex. You're right.
Yeah, and you go to tournaments there. You see everything there. It's quick access. That's what I thought was the benefit of this being right by the 401. But I remember when it was announced and my daughter was playing, my youngest was playing AA midget for Cambridge at the time.
Okay.
And the blowback was almost immediate on the idea of driving maybe from town line over to Homer Watson. Because the 401 was always backed up, and now we got an HOV lane there.
I mean, what better location could you have? When people get all wound up if you say, okay, we're going to put something right in the middle of a subdivision or by a subdivision or by, like here, you're right off the 401.
Yeah.
You've got parking, And the other thing that, I always thought was a good idea was if there's rinks there during the day, the college might just be renting the ice time, which sat empty, in the city.
Yeah.
There might be programs that you can,
Yeah.
And I mean, there's more than just hockey. There's skating, there's broom ball, there's sledge hockey, you name it.
Yeah. And that's the thing about, there's that prime ice time, which is usually your weekends and evenings.
Yeah.
And then there's that non-prime time, which really you could go into any arena and throw a bowling ball down there. It's like no one's around, right?
Exactly.
In there. So yeah, no good point. So you never got a chance to call the vote while you were chairing this committee?
No.
Wasn't ready to, or what?
I don't think it was ready yet. And it needed a little bit more, but when I got elected at the region, of course, Frank Montero, he got appointed the chair of the committee, and Frank was passionate about it, and he did a great job too. But there was forces on the other side working.
Well, yeah, on Frank, yeah, definitely, because I remember being out at the air complex, and he was out there getting a tour with Mayor Foxon at the time, to check it out and stuff, and we had a good conversation. Yeah. But when you say forces, you're talking about community members of the community that were opposed to this.
I would say it was more political people.
Political.
Yeah.
Like members of council that didn't support the idea.
Well, yeah, and of course they motivated some of the people out in the, I would say, Rob, the majority of Cambridge wanted this project, and even to this day, I'm still bumping into people saying, Carl, geez, we missed the boat. I said, oh, yeah, Oh yeah, I agree.
I was always a supporter of it, and you know, people brought up the argument about. I guess there was also this again, you know, this Cambridge Waterloo Region or Cambridge Kitchener thing, right? I mean, that was a sticking point too. Unfortunately,
I was upset about it, but I laughed because you know they were saying things like, "Oh, you're building this for Kitchener."
I know.
You're building it. You know, the people that are going to go there are going to go to the restaurants and the hotels in Kitchener. Like, it's baloney. Rob, Carl Zare came down once to Cambridge Council and said, you know, we need money Center and Square. And he was making a pitch for it. And I spoke up and I said, Carl, I said, you know, like, that's a city of Kitchener. Well, no, it's more regional now, Carl. And I said, well, when I go there, I pay to get in. And by the way, while we're on the subject, we're about to build a Drayton Theater here in Cambridge. How much are you going to contribute to that? Well, nothing. Well, I said, well, there's your answer. Anyways.
One with a C.
And I always tell him he spelled his name wrong. But you know, he always looked out to, and to this day he still looks out for Kitchener. You know, he's a, you know.
I just realized my middle name's Carl with a K. So
there you go. We got something in common, Rob.
That's where we get along. Okay, so yeah, so you had to pass the torch. And unfortunately, that thing just went. And it surprised me, too, that it got by the rails because, you know, Doug Craig had to steer through a whole lot of controversial capital projects like the City Hall, like the School of Architecture, like the library.
And you know what, Rob? I supported him and those projects. Okay. Yeah. To Doug's credit, you know, he brought the library, schools, all those things, theater. You know, all those things he was on top of. And I was very supportive. And I just thought he could have been a little more of a driving force in this multi-use thing.
One of my first podcasts, one of the early ones I did was with Doug, and we talked about this issue. And Doug, I think he acknowledges that social media was the issue. Unlike these other projects, because you didn't have social media wasn't as prominent when these other projects were on. This one, I always said, don't read the social media. Don't read the Facebook pages and all that stuff. Do what you think you got to do.
I've never been on Facebook, Rob, and still am not.
Yeah. I'm on just if I want to check and see whose kids are doing what these days, who's graduated.
I check with my kids to see what's on there.
or what meal is looks like at a certain restaurant.
Exactly.
So, okay, let's pull her back to Preston issues then, okay, a little more to there. And, you know, the biggest thing I would say Preston as a landmark was the Preston Springs Hotel.
Right.
Give me your thoughts on that whole saga. That's almost like a sad story.
Well, it is a sad story because, you know, it's a landmark, not just for Preston. I mean, at one time, Rob, as you know, it was a world famous spa. The fact remains, though, that it's privately owned a piece of property. And, you know, I know the Heritage people were all over it and wanting the city. But the Heritage people weren't going to put up the money to do anything for it either. So when we had somebody like Mr. Haas, I think, was the ones that looking to do something there. And of course, you know, he was having difficulty not just with the city, but with the region as well in terms of what he wanted to put or would like to put in there. And it's a difficult corner, as you know. But I felt just like a lot of other Prestonians, it was a landmark, you know, and, you know, we hate to lose it. And yeah,
there was even a committee at one time with Donna. I think Donna Reed is chair, I think.
I can't remember if she had me on that committee or not, but I know she headed it up and she was trying to work with the developer as best she could and with the residents and everything else. And, unfortunately it ended up.
It is a tough piece of geography, right? I mean,
exactly.
That hill.
Yeah, I remember talking to the residents up and behind it, and I said, you know, maybe we could come in from the road up above it and come down. As you know, it's quite a steep hill there. But
yeah, Shotts Hill, right?
Could have been some work could have been done, but at a cost, of course, too. But the residents were just wild. They said, "No, we don't want that." Excuse me. So it never went anywhere either.
Well, so it reminds me though too, because thinking of that intersection of King and Fountain.
Yep.
And I remember early days when I was on regional council that came before us, I sat beside Doug Craig on the horseshoe, and there was a question about whether to put a roundabout in there or not. And some gentlemen who were acting or representing the owners of the land sort of across the street by the Riverside Park side.
Yeah, where the Knotty Pine was and the flour mill.
Yeah. So opposite the other side of the street from the Knotty Pine, right? So
okay.
that part. So we're adjacent to the park, right? So
so
they came and they said, yeah, we're looking to develop this property and this roundabout's going to take up too much land from us, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And so I kind of like looked at Doug and the view was, no, we won't put in a roundabout. We'll just leave it as an intersection. And today I'm thinking that was one of those unfortunate situations where council probably should have went with the staff recommendation.
Yeah, in hindsight, Rob, I think that's exactly right. Because, as you know, if you're coming from the Crestview condominiums, you can't make a left-hand turn without, actually turn. You can make a left-hand turn, but you're taking your life into your hands. A roundabout would have solved that issue.
Yeah, and now Shotts Hill is built. It's got that swoop and continuation into that intersection. So
the I'm trying to think of the name of the flour mill now. It's
I know what you mean, though. I can't remember the name either.
That's an issue too, because they have big tractor trailers coming in and out of there, and traffic gets tied up,
It's a tough intersection. What would have been at one time the outskirts of town, now suddenly with all development,
exactly
within town. So yeah, it makes it certainly difficult. So unfortunately, then we lost the Preston Spring. So inability to decide what to do results in deterioration, which results in an order to have the thing torn down.
That's right.
Yeah. Could you have done anything different there?
Don't think so.
Yeah.
Don't think so. As much as I would have liked to, I don't think so, Rob.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I don't know if it's a Preston issue so much, but the Riverside Dam.
Right.
That's always been an interesting conversation as well. Another one of those ongoing long conversations on council.
Yeah. Having lived in Preston all my life, and you and my parents and everybody and their brother use that park, it's a jewel, not just for the city of Cambridge, it's for the region as well. And that dam, I was always in favor of either getting it fixed or replaced, one or the other. And we had started to put on council at the time, we had started to put together a fund so that we could, when the time came. And I think we were up to about 8 million or whatever. But, now what was happening is we had an engineer at the time who no longer is with the city, of course, who wasn't really taking this thing into the right direction. And of course there was people say, take the dam down and naturalize it.
Right.
There was also that many that said, no, don't be doing that, fix it up. And now, of course, it's up around 20 million, I think, to do it. And it's not that I didn't want to do it, but I know when I ran in the by-election to when Donna died, I was going to carry on for her to the end of the term. And then some people were going around in the by-election saying that, Kiefer's against the dam. Well, that's not true. All as I said was you'd have to look at the financial aspect of it. That's all I said.
Yeah.
And they were going around promoting that I was against it.
So you're raising though a different point that I just want to touch on is how costs escalate on these things when you can't get around to it.
Absolutely. Just like in North Dumfries to twin the arena.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to wait 2-3 years, that cost is going to be unreal too. Take the LRT. you know, Cambridge, what, $4 billion now? $4 billion.
I know. We'll talk about that when we talk about the regional stuff. But but on the arena, for example, back then when you were on the committee, what do you recall what the estimated cost would have been to build at the Conestoga site?
I had the figure at one time, Rob, and but I don't know, but it was a lot less than what's going on now.
Oh, the cost to twin the Preston,
right?
You know, you know, it's just, it's unbelievable.
Well, now, it's not just twinning; they're expanding the ice surface and the auditorium that to be NHL size, and
And the seating too, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, my idea of seating was always that, you know, you got to have one rink or two that has seating all around, like in air, for instance.
Yeah.
And you know, I back in the 70s when Preston, the arena burned down, and the town of Preston then would put, you know, built what's now called the auditorium, Preston Auditorium. Kerry Leach was involved with figure skating, and he was an influential guy at the time, and he wanted seating on one side only. And now you see a lot of rinks with seating on one side only. I don't think you know, like when I go to air, and I do go, and by the way, I do go to air sometimes to watch the Centennials play the Red Hawks and came from Cambridge.
Oh, okay, I'll remember next time they're playing. I'll pop out with you.
The environment, Rob. You know, it's great. It, you know, you get that bowl scenario and
down
and
the ice.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just for hockey. I mean, any entertaining thing that's going on the ice, you know, if you have that bowl shape. But anyways, and I'm not saying all the rinks need to have that.
Right.
But, you know, but I'll take you back to 1995 for a second here. City of Cambridge and the Galt Arena came up for a question. Do we tear it down? Interesting. Well, so council said, no, wait a minute. We're not tearing this down. So it cost us $5 million to renovate it to what you see today.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful, I mean, it's the oldest operating arena, you know, going. And anybody that comes into that arena, though, Rob, says, hey, what a great arena, you know, and the atmosphere and this and that. And I'll never forget, you know, I mean, as much as you know, Doug did a lot of things for a lot of other areas and libraries and schools, you know, he was the only vote against that particular ring. So anyways, but he did agree it was a great thing after it was finished. So
yeah, interesting. I wasn't aware that was going on during your term. So see, yeah, another positive thing. But you know, it gets to that whole idea. I think sometimes when councillors get elected, you know, like when you want to buy a house, you got to get a mortgage.
Right.
You buy a car. Some people do get car loans. You know, anything substantial, sometimes you got a loan.
Right.
But when people get on council, it's like, I can't borrow. We can't do that. But in your personal life, you do, or else you're not going to get these things. And then if you wait too long, it's too expensive.
And yet the criticism, Rob, as you know, from, you know, everybody says, oh, you should run council like a business. Well, you just described a couple of examples there that were businesslike, and that's what you got to do.
Yeah. So I think I saw a quote from you. It was sort of like, you want to run like a business to a point, but it can't be run totally like a business. And I've always shared that view too.
Correct.
Because what business, look, you know, you ran your financial services business. You didn't have the newspaper checking on your budget and you didn't have people coming in watching over your shoulder while you're doing your work day to day. Right. That's the difference, right?
Exactly.
It's in the public realm. So it's a whole different animal.
That's right.
But I do think though, that sometimes you can't always say, well, we're just going to pay cash for that. Cause I don't think it's feasible.
No, that's true. And then there are other times where, you know, depending on what the situation is with interest rates, this, that, and everything else, that it might be, you know, like you said, hey, maybe we should borrow some money to do this, or maybe we should go ahead with this.
I just want to, before we wrap up, I want to talk about Lang's Community Health and Wellness Center, because that's in your...
Yeah, it was in my ward at the time when I was a counselor, and I worked with Bill Davis and the former executive director. And I think it's just a magnificent facility.
How did that come about? So you were there right from the beginning, right? Initial.
Yeah. Well, Bill ran a neighborhood association, you know, called, you know, the Langs Neighborhood Association, and they worked out of one of the townhouse. What do they call it? What do they call it? not affordable townhouse. What's the word I'm looking for here?
I don't know, attainable or whatever.
Well, it wasn't affordable. It was, you know, it was on the just right beside the Fairview Mennonite home.
Okay.
And so he worked out of there, and he was trying to establish, you know, the neighborhood association as, you know, to do this and to do that. And boy, you know, it really took off. And then, and of course, and he got the Fairview Mennonite home involved and a few other people involved. And he was a great advocate to get the provincial and federal governments involved. He could get funding, which, you know, he needed. I mean, the facility, as you know, because it's in North Dumfries as well as Cambridge, is magnificent for folks to.
You're talking about the Langs Community Health and Wellness Center. So basically he created that from nothing.
Exactly.
That's a tremendous accomplishment, because that is a wonderful facility.
And if you want to say it came from something, it came because of being a neighborhood association, you know?
Yeah.
He started that way.
Were you able to help him with that project?
Yes, anything politically, you know, that had to do with the city and that, I was, you know, I was right there for him. And Jane and Doug were both, you know, they both mayors were supportive of it.
Yeah,
at all times. And to me, neighborhood associations, you know, they don't cost you money. They save you money, Rob.
They're good. And I think what Bill demonstrated too was leveraging partnerships, because when we had Langs came out to air to set up a satellite location, and when we were in the middle of you know, drumming up support for our community center as a grassroots organization, Bill got involved with us right away. I didn't know this guy from Adam, and he got involved with us right away. And it was through that collaboration. And now we have, you know, they have a permanent medical center site at that location. Yep. And the whole concept was, different groups come together, everybody builds a wall, build four walls, you got a building, right? I mean, that's the sort of the barn raiser attitude of it all.
And that's what you need. That's the, you know, to move ahead and successfully move ahead. That's the kind of thing you need.
Yeah. So, I was going to talk about, budgets and that sort of thing, with you. But we'll do that another time, when we,
that's a good idea, Rob.
Just, you know, about, you know, what can you cut, what can't you cut, and how hard those sorts of things are. You would have been through a lot of budgets in your time, but what we'll do is, so Carl, listen, we're going to wrap it up at this point, okay. And then when we come back, we'll do a second show talking about the, you know, your transition to regional council, your time there, you know, the pandemic going on, some time on the police services board as well, and just some of your experiences with that. So thanks a lot for being part of the show today and sharing a little walk on memory lane down Preston Springs and Old King Street and everything else.
Well, Rob, I want to thank you for having me on. I don't know why you would want to have a guy like me on, but anyways, I appreciate it. I look forward to the next time.
Okay, thanks, Carl. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Old Gray Mayors podcast. If you have any ideas for stories or people you would like us to interview or reach out to, please feel free to contact us. And thank you again.